I'm good. All right. We should probably start moving along before Keith thinks I just let this thing totally get off the rails. All right. Well, this morning, we're going to be looking at one of the more well-known stories of Jesus. But before we do that, I thought it would be appropriate that we have an art lesson. Any people like art? That's it? Yeah, that's what happens when you take art out of schools. All right, this picture was painted in 1633. Anyone know by who it was painted? Anyone? No? Rembrandt, who said that? Well done. Yes, this is a famous painting by Rembrandt called The Calming of the Storm, which fits. I'm intrigued by Rembrandt. He's an interesting character. He's the best known Dutch painter in history. And let me just share with you a few tidbits about Rembrandt. Some little idiosyncrasies, if you might call them, or trademarks, if you will. One of which is his use of the color yellow. Not in all his paintings, but in some of them. So notice where the yellow is. Kind of right here. Ideally coming from the sky, from the heavens. In Rembrandt's painting, yellow sort of symbolizes hope, where hope in his picture can be found by looking for the color yellow. But a really interesting thing about Rembrandt, he didn't do this in all his paintings, but he did do, particularly more in his biblical scenes that he painted, he would paint himself into the scene. So if you were to count, the resolution's probably not good enough for you to do this, but if you were to count, besides Jesus, there are 13 figures on the boat. He painted himself in this painting. He is this guy right here in the blue. One hand holding the rope and one hand on his hat. That's Rembrandt. He painted himself into his photo or into his paintings quite often. And also, you got the symbolism, you got the cross at the mass here. So interesting thing. Now, here's what's even more interesting. Well, you may or may not find it interesting, but in 1990, this painting was on display in Boston at the Isabel Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston. And 1990, so 27 years ago to yesterday, this painting, along with several others, were stolen from that museum, never recovered. Considered one of the greatest art heists in U.S. history. This from a museum in Boston, which only goes to show that there's nothing but liars, cheaters, and thieves in New England. I couldn't wait to tell you that. It's also, incidentally, His only seascape that he's ever done. He's done a lot of landscapes, a lot of people portraits, but this is his only maritime scene, was The Calming of the Sea. Now, let's jump into our passage. It can be found in Luke chapter 8. Really just a short few verses. One day, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's go to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake, and that's a squall is just a tremendous storm. Came down the lake, so the boat was being swamped, and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." Let me pause for just a second. Matthew's version, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, this story can be found. Matthew's version, it says, "Lord, save us, we're going to drown." Which I find interesting when you consider the follow-up here. He got up, rebuked the wind and the raging waters, the storm subsided, and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked them. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the waters, and they obey him. So they woke him up saying, save us. Well, what were they expecting was going to happen? If not this. I'm not sure. But before we really dive into this passage, I got a couple, you're going to think they're unrelated, but I've got a couple stories I want to share with you, some people in my life that I want to share a little bit of their stories with you. The first is my friend Corey. Corey became like a little brother to me. I met Corey, I think it was in 1999, when he first started attending our home group in Indianapolis. Now, I thought, when I first met him, I thought, this guy is never going to stick with our home group. He was the only single guy, young guy, right out of college, with a bunch of married people. Like, surely he's going to find a more target-rich environment and, you know, then hang out with us. But no, he stayed. He kept coming week after week and really plugged himself in. And I even told him, I said, you know, I was sort of expecting you to find a group with more singles. And he said, no, you know what? I'm here because I want to mature. I want to develop. And that would actually be a distraction. It's like, wow. This is a solid, mature guy. And so he stayed with us for years. He did eventually meet a nice young lady by the name of Lori, Corey and Lori, how nice, who was a home group leader of another group. So I thought, surely, that's going to be, he's going to go on and go to Lori's group. Well, as it turned out, Lori was kind of needing a break from leading home groups, so she ended up coming to our group. And so they were part of our group until we left Indianapolis. They got married, by the way, and had a daughter a couple years after that. And then Lori got diagnosed with breast cancer. Fought it successfully for the first year or so, went into remission. About a year after that, it came back with a vengeance. And she ended up succumbing to cancer. And Corey went into a very dark place. Now let me tell you about my friend Charlie. Charlie grew up at a boys' ranch, which is a place for troubled youth, though he wasn't a troubled youth. His parents ran the place. He and his two brothers lived there. He would say it was a charmed life, being able to live and be raised in a place like that. When he was in high school, his mom got cancer. And again, the same, very similar story. They fought hard. I mean, and these are strong Christian people praying over them all the time. And by the time Charlie was in early college, his mom passed away of cancer. Even Rembrandt, 3 of his first 4 children died. His wife died. He went into bankruptcy. Artists aren't particularly known for being great with money. And even his one child that lived, Rembrandt actually outlived. I bring these 3 people up, Corey, Charlie, and Rembrandt, to say this. I cannot, with good conscience, stand up before you right now and say, Jesus will calm the storms of your life. I just can't do it. I don't believe that to be true, actually. Now, here's the thing. I also don't think that's why the gospel writers have this story included. That's not the takeaway from this story, I don't believe. Well, then that begs the question, well, what is the takeaway from this story? What are we supposed to get from this? And I'm pretty confident, I also don't need to convince you of this. I'm pretty sure with your experience of life, you've seen this. You've seen people who've gone through the pain and the storms and the troubles and distresses of life. And it beat him up bad. So then what is the takeaway from this story? Well, let me tell you this, though, before I jump into that. Can I sit here confidently and say, in the midst of the storms of life, that Jesus will be with you? Yes. Unequivocally, yes. That is a promise from Scripture. Here's just a couple places where it states that. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. We can bank on that. Yes. Whatever storms we face, he will be with us through them. That's not the same as saying, however, that He's going to make them go away. Can I also confidently say that good stuff can come out of that? Yes. Romans 8 tells us, all things work together for good for those who love him. Can he redeem any situation? Yes. Can something good and beautiful come out of it? Yes. Does that mean we still got to go through it? Oftentimes, yes. Yeah. Now, so that begs actually another question, because we read passages where Jesus does supernatural stuff. He heals people and he calms storms and all this other stuff. So we know he can do certain things if he so chose. And let's face it, that's probably the most nagging question we all feel, right? When either it's happening to our own in our own lives or someone that we deeply care about, we know he can fix it. But oftentimes, he doesn't. Oftentimes, he doesn't. So that's where I think the question that Jesus asks the disciples kind of comes into play. Where is our faith? Will we hold on to it? Will we hold on to him when we're getting battered by life? It's a question to consider. But remember, he also said this in John 16, 33. In this world, you will have trouble. But take heart. I have overcome the world. That's why I can't say he's going to calm the storms of our life. He will be with us through them. Calm them, that's sort of his prerogative. But we can bank on the fact that we will have trouble. What kind of trouble? What form it will take? How it will affect us? Hard to say. Let me go back to Corey and Charlie. I can't really speak for Rembrandt, but I know Charlie and Corey. Corey now lives in San Diego. He did not envision himself becoming a single father, particularly in the way he became a single father in his early 30s. He moved out to San Diego because there were just too many reminders of Lori. He had a hard time going to church. One, because there was a lot of reminders of Lori, and that's where they met and all that. And he was really, really angry at God. So he had some family out in San Diego, moved out to San Diego. And he knew in his heart, Lori would want their daughter, Casey, to grow up in church. Even though he was at this point still very angry at God. He went ahead and got her into a church school and went to church with her. And over time, God brought him out of that dark place. But he still went through the storm. He's in a very good place now. His faith is rock solid. He and his daughter, Casey, are doing fine. But man, what a storm. My friend Charlie, he's a pastor in Flagstaff. He still has his intellectual doubts. You know, when someone in his church gets sick and they pray, because he knows he's got to do that, he'll confess very easily to admit. It's hard for him, because they also prayed for his mom. But he knows he needs to. And he impacts hundreds of people a year. He's a very sought-after camp speaker, and particularly at camps and the Young Life circuit. So there's just a couple guys who've gone through storms. But the storms didn't go away. They weren't calm. We would like that, wouldn't we? But again, I really don't think this is the point of this passage, that Jesus will calm the storms of our lives. See, here's what we tend to do when we approach Scripture. I think in our rush to make it relevant, to apply it, what does this mean to me? Well, at least what has happened oftentimes with this passage in particular, about Jesus calming the storm, is, well, we take a literal historical event, Jesus calming the storm, and we turn it into a metaphor that we can somehow make into our lives. This has nothing to do with the storms. You and I face storms, yes, but this has nothing to do with the storms you and I face. This passage hasn't anything to do with us. This passage has everything to do with Jesus. That is why the gospel writers have this in their record. The question as to why is this here, what do the gospel writers want their readers, then and now, to get? they wanted to get us asking this question, the same question that they asked, that the disciples asked. Who is this guy? Even the winds and the waves obey him. If you're like me, I don't know if you are like me or not, but if you are, I've been to church pretty much my whole life. I've known the stories of Scripture since I was yay high to a grasshopper. I mean, I could tell you the stories, most of them. What I was really convicted by on this passage is, yeah, Jesus, calm the storm. La-da-da-da-da, let's move on. Whoa. I think right there is a problem. Do I still experience awe and wonder and amazement when I think of Jesus? And I would pose that same question to you. Do you still get your socks blown off when you consider Jesus? Or is it just like reading a story? Or you're just so familiar with it, it's like, that's cool, but whatever. I think that concerns me. It concerns me within myself if I can just kind of like, whatever. No. This is the one we are gathered here right now to celebrate, to praise, to sing about, to follow with our lives. If we're not amazed by him from time to time, I'm a little concerned. There's a very well-known passage in the book of Acts. Actually, we'll go there. It says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as they had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those that were being saved. Now, church-going folk like us, we love this passage. It's like, oh, look at the early church. That's the model church. We've got to be just like them. You know, devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the breaking of bread, to fellowship and prayer, and they're sharing everything. And how beautiful is that? And we miss the centerpiece of the whole passage. Right there in bold. Nope. Let me go back one. Everyone was filled with awe. You know, we can do this whole church thing all day long and twice on Sundays. Or at least they used to do it twice on Sundays. We don't do it twice on Sundays anymore. But if we're not doing it, if the inspiration of being inspired by who this Jesus is isn't the fuel, I got to ask what is. If we don't wake up every morning marveled at this Jesus. That makes me wonder, where are our hearts? So I believe the gospel writers, first and foremost, included this episode for their readers, you and I, to ask that question. Who is this? And not just to have all the theological, doctrinal, right statements about him, but to internally be moved and inspired and awestruck by this Jesus. I think we're invited to reflect on that question. But then I think the second reason, and I think this is always a timely question, is a question that Jesus posed back to the disciples. I'll give you all three versions of it, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Matthew's, you of little faith, why are you so afraid? Mark, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? And then Luke's, of course, is where is your faith? Now here's something we lose in the translation of the written word. We can't quite get a handle or a grasp on his tone in how he's saying this. We could read it as, a very severe chastisement. Was he really mad and angry and disappointed with them? Where is your faith? Or was it, maybe more gentle? Guys, where's your faith, guys? And again, I don't think he was trying. His lesson to them in the boat wasn't that He was going to solve all their problems, any problems that they're going to ever encounter. We surely, by history, we know that was not the case for them most of the time. They had their own storms later on. But he did, in this particular instance, calm that storm. And it was to reveal himself more fully to them. You know, they've been seeing him reveal more and more of himself to them. You know, we've seen a similar question of who is this when it came to them or to him forgiving sins. Who is this that even forgives sins? We saw that earlier in Luke. Only God forgives sins. That's right. You're on the right track, guys. Who is this that the winds and the waves obey him? I think that's only something God can do. Yep. You're on the right track, guys. Part of me wonders, now, let me just preface this by saying this is purely conjecture on my part. So let me just let you know that. This is my conjecture. I wonder, and by the way, we are permitted and, in fact, encouraged to wonder when we approach particularly stories, to really think through all the options of what's going on in the situation. Think it through. Don't label it as the gospel. Admit when it's just our conjecture or what we're wondering, like I'm doing to you now. Here's my conjecture. I wonder if, perhaps, the disciples were maybe getting a little overconfident in who they were. You know, they're buddies with Jesus, and Jesus is the one that's, you know, he's healing people, raising people from the dead. And maybe when he said, hey, let's get in the boat and go to the other side of the lake, I wonder, just conjecture, if he knew what was going to happen. He needed to maybe knock them down a couple notches. He needed maybe, for them to see, you are still fearful on a certain level. And we need to help you through that. Because what he was going to end up doing with them down the road as he sends them out to impact the world is they have to be bold and fearless. And as we know, they were. I wonder if this was a stepping stone for them. It's kind of like a coach. When your team is getting overconfident, sometimes, maybe not this time of year, but sometimes the best thing that can happen is a loss. To get you recalibrated, not so overconfident, so that you can actually learn some more. Wonder if maybe that was happening. Perhaps Luke doesn't really, or don't know the other gospel writers really elaborate as to that, but I wonder if Jesus knew what was going to happen. It's possible. So here's kind of what I want to leave us with this morning. Those two things, those two ideas. Do we stand in awe of Jesus? And the same question Jesus asked, where is our faith? Is our faith just in the positive aspect of our faith? It's fun to gather around, sing together, be with like-minded people who we share a lot of the same opinions on important things together. You know, safer here than in the world. You know, there's a positive aspect to the faith. But there's also, when we take our faith seriously, when we live in obedience, when we step out in faith to do stuff, we can get popped by the world pretty hard. And that's not something we should avoid. We should do so out of being inspired by the fact that we serve an awesome, mind-blowing leader in Jesus, who may or may not calm the storms that we face, but we'll be there through it. And regardless, because of who he is, we're going to do it. So do we stand in awe of this Jesus? And is our faith only when times are good? Think back a couple weeks ago when Ryan preached on the parable of soils. Remember the two middle soils? The one with no root, when the time of persecution came, time of trouble came, it withered. Or the other one, that when the worries of this world and the affections of this world kind of choked it out. Where is our faith? Or when the storms hit, and they may, in a little life, a little rain must fall, they say, will we stand firm? I want to leave you with this psalm, a part of a psalm. From Psalm 73. Yet I am always with you. You hold me by my right hand. You guide me with your counsel, and afterward you will take me into glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Is that the sort of faith that we have? That's the sort of faith we're invited to consider. Reflect on this great Jesus. And then, is our faith this, that Jesus is all I want? If I've got Jesus, I've got everything, regardless of what else happens in my life. Is that where we're at? So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do things just a slightly bit different this morning. Usually about this time the band comes up and they immediately start playing our next worship set. Here's what I want to do this morning. Just in reflection, reflecting on this Jesus. I'm going to take a couple minutes of just straight silence. Just to think, reflect, perhaps pray. Who is this Jesus? Not just who is he in the Word written, who is he in your life? He commands the wind and the rains, but does he command our life? Have we allowed him that? Let's go ahead and dim the lights. I'm going to sit in silence for a couple minutes before the band comes up, okay?